week, we were talking about the importance of Yiras Shamayim. And as we said, not only do we have a tefillah in the very beginning of the Siddur of Le'olam Yehei Adam Yirei Shamayim, a person always has to make sure that they are filled, that they are inundated with Yiras Shamayim, but also, somebody very correctly mentioned last week, in Moda Ani itself. Wasn't that you? You were sitting here last week. So, in the very beginning paragraph of Moda Ani itself, we say, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem, which is a very correct and astute observation. So, this is something that is mentioned throughout Tanakh, that Yiras Shamayim is a very important quality. As we know, we say in the end of Eishes Chayil, Sheker Achein Vehevel Ayofi, Isha Yiras Hashem Hitesalo. The most important quality that a person can ever have in life is the fact that they can be a Yare Shamayim. And Koheles ends off and he says, Sof Davar Hakol Nishma, Es Elokim Yira Ves Mitzvos Av Shemar, Kizeh Kol HaAdam. The greatest thing that a person can do in life is to be a Yare Shamayim, to have a recognition of the presence of God in their life, because that is really going to be the guiding force in everything that you do. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman had an observation in that pasuk, and he said, you know, you have some people who have certain qualities that others don't have. I happen to know how to sing. Other people know how to dance. Other people might know how to write very nicely. So everybody has their own thing. Would you say that I'm a person who's lacking in life because I don't know how to dance? No. You'll say, I'm okay. There's one thing that's deficient in my life, but I can live without it. It's okay. And we all have that. We all have something that we might not be so great at, but we can live life even without having that ability to do so. Says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, if you look in that pasuk that we mentioned last week, Sof Davar HaKol Nishma, if you want to sum up everything, and you want to know what it's all about, as we said in Sefer Koheles, Es Elokim Yira, Ves Mitzvos Av Shemar, Kizeh Kol HaAdam. What does it mean, this is the entirety of man? He says, it's as if you would tell someone, you know, you're a perfect person aside from the fact that you don't have a heart. Well, that means you don't really exist. Everything about you is beautiful and wonderful other than the fact that you don't have a brain. Or you don't have lungs. I mean, that means the person is no longer living on this earth. Well, says Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, that's what the pasuk means. If you don't have Yiras Shamayim, Kizeh Kol HaAdam, that is the heart of a person. That is everything that we're supposed to be. And if you're missing that very important quality, if you're missing that attribute, you have nothing. It's not that you're just deficient and, all right, I'll make it up at some point. It's you have nothing. You have no understanding of what life as a Jew is meant to be. And therefore, he points out how important it is that a person makes sure to highlight this aspect, this notion of Yiras Shamayim in life, because without it, the pasuk tells us in Sefer Koheles, Ki zeh kol ha'adam, this is what man is all about, and this is really what life is all about. If we look in the source sheet that I gave out tonight, again, we won't call it a handout, the Gemara Maseches Brachos, Daf Chav Ches, tells us a very startling statement. Kishachala Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and I put the English right underneath. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the leader of his generation, he was the Nasi, and he had so many great, prominent students. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai fell ill, Nichnasu Talmidav Levakro, naturally his students came to visit him. Amar lo Rabbeinu, so they said, look, you're not well. Who knows how long you're going to survive? Who knows whether or not you're going to live at all? So we'd like you to leave us off with some meaningful parting words. We'd like you to give us a blessing before it's too late. So what would you think? What would you imagine the leader of the generation would give over as a parting message to his students, who are going to be probably the future leaders of the Jewish people? So he would probably tell them about what the job entails, and he would tell them all kinds of life lessons. He gives them one message, and that is it. A very simple one. Amar Lahem, he says, my only message to you is the following. Yihi Ratzon, may it be the will of Hashem, Shetehe Mora Shamayim Aleichem, Kemora Basar Vadam. My only blessing that I can impart onto this group of students at the very end of my life is, if only you have the opportunity in life to develop a sense of understanding of the presence of God, the same way you have an understanding as to the presence of other people. So his students are looking back at him and they are a little bit surprised. That's all you have to say? Amru lo talmidav, the students say, Ad kan? Is that the only message you can share with us at this very critical moment of your life? Amar lahem, when you grow up, you'll understand how important a message it is. He says, Teidu, we all know, Shekesha Adam over Aveira Omer, Shalo Yirani HaAdam. We all know that when somebody, we all have a guilty conscience when we do something wrong, but we sort of say to ourselves, all right, as long as nobody saw what I did, as long as I got away with it, as long as it was in private, didn't hurt anybody else, it was my thing, nobody else has to know about it, nobody else, and we're afraid that someone's going to find out and expose us for what we did. Said Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, if we can live life developing the sense of understanding of the presence of God the same way we have an understanding and fear of the presence of other people exposing us, he said that's the greatest blessing I can ever give anyone. Which sort of gives us the understanding and the feeling as to what it means when the Navi says, Ki zeh kol ha'adam, this is life, this is everything. If you have that, if you understand what it means to have the Ribono Shel Olam as a real presence in your life, then you have everything. Everything else falls into place. So the Gemara in Maseches Brachos Daf Lamed Gimel tells us a startling comment, and this is something that we find expressed in greater detail in Nida Daf Tes Zayin. The Gemara says in Nida Daf Tes Zayin, just by way of introduction to this, that before a child is born, the Malach Hamamuna Al Hahirayim, you have all kinds of angels that have different jobs in heaven. The Ribono Shel Olam asks everybody to do something else. And each one has a particular task that they are expected to do. So there's one angel that is in charge of life, there's one angel that's in charge of death, and there's one angel that's Mamuna Al HaParnasa. And there's different messengers that have a job to do different things. So here we have a messenger who is Mamuna Al Hahirayim. What does that mean? His job is to be in charge of pregnancies. Now what that means, I don't exactly know. But the Gemara says at some stage in the pregnancy, this Malach takes his job very seriously. He presents the embryo in front of God, and he says, Tipazu, this little sapling, this little child that's a nothing yet, Chacham o Tipesh, will this child grow up to be someone with intellect, or perhaps not? Ani o Ashir, will he grow up to have a life where he's going to be wealthy and self-sustaining and a principled person, or perhaps not? Perhaps he'll always be needy. Perhaps he'll always need the handouts. Or maybe, he asks, will this person be a gibor or a chalash? Will he be the stronger kind of personality, or will he be a little bit more subdued? Those are all questions that he discusses with God, and they figure it out, and then the child is born. However, the Gemara says he does not ask if he's going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. That is not a question that is discussed between this angel and God. Why not? Because the Gemara says, Hakol bidei shamayim, everything in life that happens, happens because God wants it to happen. Chutz miyira shamayim. That is the sole aspect of our lives that is given over, that is handed over to us to decide and to determine what exactly we're going to do with that question. Chacham o tipesh, I was created the way I was created. Either I have the intellect or I don't. There's nothing I can do to change that. Ani o Ashir, as hard as I'm going to work, as much as I'm going to cheat other people, if God doesn't want me to be rich, it's just not going to happen. Gibor o Chalash, if I'm going to be strong and powerful, or if I'm going to be, you know, someone that doesn't have that ability at all, that's all determined by God before a person is born. The one question that we don't know the answer to, and that God himself does not give an answer to, is Tzaddik or Rasha. Because that is in the ability for every human being to determine. And you look at the Gemara in Brachos Daf Lamed Gimel, which is the second entry here, and it says, Amar Rab Chanina, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyira shamayim. Everything is in the hands of God, aside for this aspect of our lives, which is referred to as yira shamayim. So let's look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva. The Rambam in the Laws of Tshuva, when he discusses what are the steps of Tshuva, how is a person supposed to get to that end goal? So the Rambam tells us, such a startling understanding that he has to the lives that we live. And on the one hand, it's an empowering statement that the Rambam makes here, you'll see, but at the same time, it's frightening, it's daunting, it's terrifying. So let's see. Writes the Rambam, L'shus l'chal adam nesuna. This is such an important Rambam to have in your repertoire because it just gives us a context for everything that life is all about as far as religion is concerned. So the Rambam says in Hilchos Tshuva, Rishus l'chal adam nesuna, and I put the English here if you want to follow along. Every individual in this capacity on and their time in this world is given a free will, is given the permission. Imratza lahatos atzmo l'derech tova v'lios tzadik. If you choose to go down the path which is the positive path and to make yourself into a righteous person, harishus biyado, God will open up those gates. God will certainly allow you and encourage you to do so. If a person so chooses, and again, if a person so chooses, not that anyone forced me to do that, but I have the ability to choose for myself to go down that path, harishus biyado. I have the ability to do so, and no one's going to stop me. Hushakasa batorah, this is what the Pasuk writes in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis. Hein ha'adam haya ka'achad mimenu lada'as tovara. The angels turn to God and say, these human beings are like us. Ladas tov hara, they know good from bad. Now, what does that mean? Kilomar, says the Rambam, what it means is, hein min ze shel ha'adam, what's unique about a human being is, haya yachid ba'olam, that we are something that is unique in the creation of the world, something that no other part of creation has. Ve'ein min sheni doma lo b'zeh ha'inyan. We cannot be compared to any other species, to any other creation at all. Sheyehehu me'atzmo b'dayto u'machshavto yodea hatova hara. That we have the opportunity, we have the capacity to understand the difference between tov and ra. Ve'ose kol mashehu chafetz, and we have the ability to choose to do whatever it is that we want. Ve'ein mi sheyeakev biyado milasos hatov v'hara. There is no one who is going to impede. There is no one who's going to restrain us. No one will prevent us from making that decision and that choice throughout the duration of our lives. Continues the Rambam. Al yavar b'machshavtecha davar zeh she'omrim tipshei umas ha'olam. Do not ever accept, says the Rambam, do not ever accept those philosophers in the world who are fools, he says. Verov golmei b'nei Yisrael, and so many people in the Jewish community who have no understanding of what life is all about, don't believe when they say Shakurish Baruch Hu gozer al ha'adam mitchilas briyaso lios tzadik o'rasha, says the Rambam, don't ever believe anyone who will come and convince you that from the outset it was determined whether or not you are going to be a great person. Ein hadavar kein, that is certainly not the case. Ela kal adam roi lo lios tzadik kimoshe rabbeinu, says the Rambam, every individual has the ability to rise to a level of righteousness like Moshe Rabbeinu. Like Moshe Rabbeinu. Or, you have the ability to fall to the level of a Rasha like Yeravam. O Chacham, O Sachal, O Rachaman, O Achzari, O Kili, O Shua, Vechein, Shar Kol Hadeus. We have the ability to choose what we want the chart of that part of life to look like. Ve'ein lo mi sheyichfehu v'lo gozer alav. There is no one who can tell you or can force you or impose upon you. No one can obligate you to go to either side. What life is all about is that we all have that ability to determine, to decide which path we want to walk on. And with Yerushamayim, the Rambam writes, the right path will be chosen. So at the same time that this is very empowering, like we said, it's also very scary. It's frightening, because it means we can be walking down the wrong path and choosing to walk down that path, and no one will stop us. A frightening comment. The Rambam says, Davar zeh ikur gadol hu. That's the next paragraph. This idea is so fundamental, is so important. V'hu amud ha-Torah v'ha-mitzvah. This is the foundation of what our religion is all about. So as we said, Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. The foundation of everything that we try to do and accomplish in our lives as Jews is to develop a sense of Yiras Shamayim, because without that, the Navi told us, Ki Zeh Kol HaAdam, this is what everything is all about. And with having that, the Rambam says, we can have the ability to have a clarity of choice in which path we want to go down. Every individual person, says the Rambam, has the ability to choose if they want to be like the great Moshe Rabbeinu, or they want to end up like the Rasha, Yeravam ben Nevat. That is a choice that all of us make. It's not a choice that God makes for us. It's a choice that we all have the ability to make, and this is all based on that Gemara where we're told, Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyira shamayim. Very insightful and very powerful comment. I'd like to learn together a passage by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. I am not one who knows the writings of Rav Aaron Lichtenstein very well, but I think this is one I came across a number of months ago, and I think it's extremely relevant to the discussion that we're having. It also is very timely for Parsha Zachar that we're going to read this coming week. So let's begin with what he says as follows. Line number 5. How are we to understand the relationship between being frum and being good? I hate to call people out, but just yesterday on the news, there was a religious man who was very prominently displayed in all of the news sites. And we don't have to get into the details, but does being frum automatically mean that you are also going to be good? It's a problem. It doesn't always mean that. It's supposed to mean that, but unfortunately it doesn't always mean that. And the question is, how do we deal with the understandings of morality and ethics and religion, and how does that all fall into place? Now,
so you're saying you can be frum without, I don't like the word fear.
I didn't say anything yet. I just posed the question.
Okay, the implication is mm-hmm. that you can be frum without having a reverence to God.
No. So I think I mentioned once in the past, last year, there's a story about Reb Muttal Katz, who was the Rosh Hashiva and Tel's Yeshiva in Cleveland. So the story, I think I said it here at some point, that he was sitting on an airplane and there was a unaffiliated Jew who was sitting next to him. And he turns to this rabbi, he says, "You seem to be a distinguished rabbi." He says, "Yes." He says, "You know, I have a question that I've been wondering for the longest time." He says, "What is that?" So he says to him, "You know, what's with all these Jews that cheat on their income taxes and we keep seeing them being reported and being arrested? I just don't understand it. How are they so dishonest? How do they call themselves religious Jews?" So he says, "No, they're not. Those aren't religious. Those are not observant Jews." So he turns to him and he says, "What do you mean?" So the rabbi says back, "You know, I've been wondering for the longest time, what's with all those Jews who eat on Yom Kippur? I mean, don't they know you're not allowed to eat on Yom Kippur? How do they go and eat on Yom Kippur? They drink on Yom Kippur. They go to the movies on Yom Kippur." So the irreligious man turns back to him and says, "Come on, those people aren't observant." He says, "Well, neither are these." Why does it make you any more observant if you keep Yom Kippur than if you don't know how to treat other people's items and other people's money and you cheat on your income taxes? You're no more religious than the person who eats on Yom Kippur. It's the same. And he taught us a lesson, and that is that the entirety of Torah is what we refer to as miksha achas. It's one big puzzle. It's one big understanding. It's one big approach to life. And if a person cannot figure out how to synthesize both the relationship with God as well as the relationship with other people, that person is not considered to be an observant Jew. But what I mean by this question is something that I know in our community, I've been asked this question by young adults, and that is, how do we deal with the story of Amalek? So this week we're about to read the parasha of Amalek. And for those of us, don't get me wrong, but I'm just putting out the question that many people ask. Don't call me an apikoros, but there are many people who have great trouble understanding what this is all about. We live in the 21st century. We are living in a democracy. We are living in a understanding society. We don't go around killing other people. And here we come across a mitzvah where God instructs us that we should go and murder other human beings. How do we deal with this in the current climate that we live in? It's very difficult for most people that I know to have an understanding as to how do we appreciate what that's all about. And not only that, if you want to make the question even worse, you know, I have a 7-year-old son, and I was very torn when he was old enough to begin learning with me at 6 or something like 5 and a half, I forgot already. Wasn't sure what to learn with him. You know, as a child, my father taught me Mishnayos. But I think we started at an older age. I don't think we started at 6 or 7 years old. And I wasn't really sure what to do. So I decided to learn with my son. And I was very glad that my father, after he saw what we chose, was very much a fan of the choice that we made. I decided to learn with my son. The Chafetz Chaim writes a very short Sefer HaMitzvos, where he goes through just all of the mitzvos and one paragraph about each one. I decided to learn it with my son, and we'll read through each mitzvah, and he'll have questions, because not everything is so clear. It's just one paragraph. There are endless questions you can ask about everything. And it was always a springboard for a discussion. So just this week, we finished the 77 mitzvahs that the Chafetz Chaim writes are the only ones that apply today, the active mitzvahs that apply to all Jews all over the world when there's no Beis HaMikdash. So we just finished that. We made a big siyum. It was very exciting. But the last mitzvah that we learned is about destroying Amalek, and my son was trying to figure out what's the story with destroying Amalek? How do we understand it? But what really threw him off was the Chafetz Chaim writes, we don't really know who Amalek is. And when Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come, he's going to identify for us who Amalek is. So imagine, Rachmana Litzlan, I don't know what we're going to do. Imagine Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come. And, you know, he's going to tell us, by the way, everybody should come back to Eretz Yisrael, your Geula. The time has come. It's time to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. We're all going to be excited. And by the way, one of the things we need to take care of is Amalek. So we're going to ask him, well, who exactly is Amalek? Well, what's he going to respond? We're all, like, hoping he's going to respond that it's, you know, the Taliban and it's, you know, all the people that
your neighbor.
What?
Might be your neighbor.
Right. What are we going to do if Eliyahu HaNavi identifies people who are people that have helped us throughout our lives, who have been doctors and lawyers and people that we do business with and people that... What are we going to do? What's going to be? And my son asked me this question. I think it's a great question. He said, what do you mean? Eliyahu HaNavi is going to tell us who they are? What if it's like someone over here and someone over there? And he's asking, as a seven-year-old, has an interesting perspective on it. But I think as adults, it's a question that we need to think about as well. What's going to happen? I don't exactly know what's going to happen. So this is one of those issues where I found that many people have a problem really appreciating what the mitzvah is all about and how those of us living today are supposed to deal with it. So at the same time that we have great sense of Yiras Shamayim and we try to always believe and trust that everything that we do is right, some people here are faced with a problem. And what I loved about this article that I read is that Rabbi Lichtenstein identifies that he himself had the problem and he didn't know what to do. So let's see what he says. Look at line 38. You can read the rest on your own. The whole article is interesting. I obviously didn't put the whole thing on here. Wherever there's three dots, it means I skipped a paragraph or two. But here, line 38, let's begin. We spoke previously of the problem of frumkeit devoid of goodness. Obviously, if you're frum, it means you got to be a good person. You have to be an understanding person. Now, I would like to address the reverse phenomenon. How do we relate personally, philosophically, professionally to goodness devoid of frumkeit, to a secular moral idealism? We surely should not dismiss nor denigrate moral idealism simply because it springs from secular sources. So he says, there are plenty of people out there who have very good ideas and nice ethics and nice morals, and maybe there's what to learn from them, and maybe we should pick up. You know, in America, we eat with a fork and knife. It's not based on a Torah principle, but that's a nice way for people to eat. Makes sense. So does that mean it's treif? Does that mean it's a horrible thing and everybody should run away from it? No. It's not here, it's not there. It's just the way a mensch in America is supposed to eat. That's the way it is. So that's what he argues. Line 55. However, there is a second kind of conflict, a different sort of tension. I mentioned before that the quest for goodness is an integral component of frumkeit. Generally speaking, this is true, but regarding certain particular tzivuyim, divine commands, surely we find instances in which obedient response to God's normative demands, meaning the Ribono Shel Olam, God asks us to do something, stands in apparent opposition to what we conceive to be good. As Jews living in the society that we live in, we have a problem appreciating what God is asking us to do. And if you will, let's say, I think more practically, for those of us who don't think in the abstract about what's going to be in Amalek, many people today, we live in a very egalitarian society. With everything else in life, we have equality. Everything. In our offices, in every other position in the world, we have equality. It's difficult for members of our generation to have an appreciation for why it is when it comes to Judaism, we can't seem to figure this out. Many will argue it's gender discrimination. There's something wrong. How could it be that the God who's the God of goodness and the God who loves us all would allow for this? It doesn't make sense. How could it be? Why are we sitting separately in the middle of davening? Why are only the men going to have an aliyah in this, from the Sefer Torah, not the women? It doesn't really make sense, right? So that's just another practical example of where we have a moral dilemma based on the community that we live in today, but at the same time, God instructs us to do otherwise. So how do we deal with that? Here the problem arises. How do we relate to this? Line 67. When there is a conflict between etzav, the moral order, and moral order, what do we do about it? For us, the answer is perhaps practically difficult, but surely it is conceptually clear and unequivocal. This, after all, is what the Akedah is all about. Kierkegaard emphasized that the Akedah represents a conflict between Avram's moral sense and the divine command. Avram Avinu is a God-fearing Jew, but he's a loving father. So how can he do what he's about to do? How can he go with a good conscience and listen to God and actually bring his son as a sacrifice on the altar? How does that make sense? And Avram Avinu is struggling with it. And Rabbi Lichtenstein writes that, you turn the page, On the one hand, Avraham Avinu has a tremendous allegiance to God, line 79. On the other hand, he knows that murder is forbidden. Nobody would allow murder to take place, and we all know how horrible it is. The message of the Akedah is clear. He argues that the message that we're supposed to walk away with from the Akedah is, God's command takes precedence. So yes, we struggle with certain things, and there are many precepts in our lives that might be difficult for us to absorb and to understand and appreciate. However, he says, the bottom line is, God's command takes precedence. So yes, it's true. Avraham Avinu, the Medrash tells us, after he came back from the Akedah, Hischil, I think the Medrash's terminology is, Hischil Avraham Avinu Tameya. Avraham Avinu gets back home and he says to himself, what in the world just happened? Yesterday you told me, Kibi Yitzchak Ikar L'Chazer. You tell me, this is everything that's going to be the continuation of my life. Now all of a sudden you tell me, Haleu Sham Liola. What's going on? Avraham Avinu is confused. The Medrash tells us that Avraham Avinu was confused. Does it take away from his strict adherence to his Yiras Shamayim? No. He's a believer in God, but he's struggling. Which also gives us the right to sometimes have struggles. It doesn't mean you're not religious. It doesn't mean you're not an observant Jew. It doesn't mean you're not a God-fearing Jew. It means you're a human being who has many different forces that are pulling at you, and you're trying to figure out how to put it all together. The task before us is multifaceted. Line 85. As those who educate towards Yiras Shamayim, we must communicate the message of the Akedah boldly, loudly, and clearly. On the other hand, as those who do seek to ingrain moral sensitivity in ourselves and in our children, we need not dismiss the ambivalences, the difficulties, and the contradictions. Don't laugh off a child when the child tells you, what's the story with Amalek? How can that be? How does God ask us to do that? The answer is, it's a really good question. It's not so simple. And it's not to be laughed at, because the child actually has a difficult tension that's going through their mind. On the one hand, we try to instill in our children and in our community Yiras Shamayim. On the other hand, we try to instill a sense of moral understanding. And here is where they clash. So let's continue to see what he says. But of course, the resolution must be clear, and the grappling must all be done within the parameters of the understanding, that however much I wrestle, however much a person has confusion, I do not for a moment question the authenticity or the authority of the Tzav. I do not judge God. I assume a priori that his deeds are perfect, ki chol derechav mishpat, that God is perfect. If he commands, line 103, take your son and offer him as a sacrifice, then it must be good. Then it must be good. Okay, line 107. Here is going to give a great understanding into a difficult story in Chazal. Chazal tells us the story that we once had a battle with Amalek. Who was that? Who was the general of the army? The great Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech goes out to fight against Amalek. What's the end of the story? What happens?
He ran away, right?
He captured
the king. Shaul HaMelech does everything he's asked to do. Except he wipes out the entire community. Who does he leave alive?
The king.
Agag. He leaves one person alive. So he does 99% of the job. Because of that, God says, you lost it all. You blew it. Takes away everything he has. God punishes him. You're not going to live this one down, God says. I did 99% of the job. Like, I did pretty good. Nope, pretty good is nothing. So how do you understand that? Really? 99% is nothing? Is that really what it means?
It is. It's usually not the way we do.
Usually we see it. God asked me to do something. I did my best. I tried. Okay, I made a mistake. So, all right, you made a mistake. One person. You did 99% of the job, which is pretty amazing.
But that's not about his level.
So let's say we take him and we throw him, we incarcerate him, we put him into jail. He's not going to have any children. Nothing's going to come from him. So what was the problem? Rabbi Lichtenstein finds it difficult to argue that Shaul HaMelech loses everything in his life because he kept one person alive. So listen to the logic that he puts forth. I think it's a very cogent argument. It's a beautiful argument. I don't know if we have time to read the whole thing. He says, God asks you to do something which is against your moral compass. God asks you, go out and destroy an entire nation. Not only the men who are the fighters, I want you to go and destroy the women who are the innocent women, the children who have never done anything, who have no understanding. I want you to destroy all them. Not only them, I want you to destroy the animals and everything that belongs to them. There cannot be a remnant of these people in the world. So God instructs that to a human being. It is so much against what we're supposed to be about. It's against every moral fiber that I have in my being. Why do I do it? What is the only rationale that I have to do it? Because God told me to do it. Said Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, by Shaul HaMelech not listening to the entire decree, to the entire job that he was given, it shows that he obviously didn't do it for God. So the reason he was punished, he argues, is not because he kept the last one alive, but because he murdered everybody else with no good reason for doing so. How profound. If you keep one person alive intentionally, not that you missed them along the way, you intentionally kept one person alive, it means you didn't listen to God. If you didn't listen to God, that means you had no right to kill anybody else. Any moral individual would say you have no right to go around killing people. The only right that you had to do it is because God told you to do it. Well, if God told you to do it the way he asked you to do it. And if you don't, it means you're not really doing it for the right reason. Look at line 124. Therefore, if Shaul had been motivated in his actions purely by the fear of God, by obedience to the Tzav, then he should have followed the command to the letter. God did not say, kill Amalek, but spare Agag. Now, if he didn't kill Agag, but killed everybody else, what does that indicate? So he argues that that indicates there was something wrong with what he did. And he didn't, in fact, really listen to God the way he was supposed to. Turn the page. Line 162. Although generally such an act would be considered immoral, it assumes a different character when God, from his perception and perspective, commands it. The same holds true of the Akedah. It demanded that Avram do something which normally is immoral. If you would hear that a parent takes their child and offers them on an altar to, you would say, what, out of their minds? How do you do such a thing? But in the context of the divine command, surely it partakes of the goodness and morality of God. We must admit that there is a conflict in this case between the usual moral norm and the immediate tzav that was given. God asked me to do something that just doesn't make sense. And Avraham Avinu himself cannot come to an understanding. What we need to do is not to instill morality less, but Yiras Shamayim more. Profound statement. What do you do when you have these ethical dilemmas? Well, you have two options. Either you just become desensitized to your moral side of yourself, or you re-emphasize and you amplify your sense of trust and belief in Yiras Shamayim and God. And if you amplify your belief in the understanding that kol derech of mishpat, that everything God asked me to do must be the right thing, then these questions slowly are taken away. I recall in my late adolescence, line 176, there were certain problems which perturbed me, the way they perturb many others. At the time, I resolved them all in one fell swoop. A beautiful story he writes here about himself. I had just read Reb Zevin's book, Isha Meshitos. In his essay on Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, the great genius, the great tzaddik Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, he deals not only with his methodological development. Obviously, he was a brilliant mind, and he really developed a whole new way of thinking for all the yeshivas, this is the way they think ever since him, but also with his personality and his gemilas chassadim. He recounted that Reb Chaim used to check every morning if some unfortunate woman had placed an infant on his doorstep during the course of the night. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? In Brisk, it used to happen at times that a woman would give birth illegitimately, and because she was so humiliated, she would leave her infant in the hands of Reb Chaim. That means it happened more than once. And he would take these children in, and he would wake up early every morning to go check outside, is there another child who's waiting at my doorstep? Amazing, just an amazing story. As I read the stories about Reb Chaim's extraordinary kindness, I said to myself, do I approach this level of gemilas chassadim? I don't even dream of it. In terms of moral sensibility, concern for human beings, and sensitivity to human suffering, I am nothing compared to Reb Chaim. How many of us can say that we would ever have such a caring and sensitivity for other people? Yet despite his moral sensitivity, despite this unusual sensitivity that Reb Chaim had, he managed to live and live deeply with the totality of halacha, including the commandments to destroy the seven nations, to destroy Amalek, and all the other things which bother me. So how could it be you have such a loving, kind, sensitive person who's willing to go outside in the middle of the streets and pick up these children that he knows nothing about and promise to raise them for the rest of their lives, and he's not challenged with the issue of Amalek? How? The answer, I thought, was obvious. It is not that his moral sensitivity was less, but rather that his Yiras Shamayim, his Emuna, was so much more. The thing to do, then, is not to try to neutralize or de-emphasize the moral element, but rather to deepen and increase the element of Yiras Shamayim, of Emuna, of Dveikus and Bitachon. I have subsequently thought of that experience on many occasions. I recall once hearing someone regarded as a philosopher of sorts raise moral criticisms of various halachic practices. When asked about these criticisms, I said, "I know that particular person. He does not look for a foundling on his doorstep every morning." So what we need to do, I think, is not to weaken our moral sense or that of our children and students. Rather, we need to deepen and to intensify our commitment, our faith, our sense of obedience, and our Yiras Shamayim. We need to deepen our sense that God has nothing in this world besides Yiras Shamayim. Like the Navi tells us, Ki zeh kol ha'adam, this is everything. You develop a sense of Yiras Shamayim, you have everything. And that our moral conscience needs to develop within its context. This is why we start our davening every day with Reishis Chachma Yiras Hashem. This is why we start off every day and we say, Le'olam yehe adam yirei shamayim. Because without putting ourselves on that path, we're completely lost for what our objective is for the day. And this is such an important factor because, especially for those of us living today, where we have so much from our moral side, from the society that we live in, that's pushing and that's telling us that there are certain moral understandings that we need to abide by and we need to agree to, that stand in such stark contrast to that which we believe to be the truth of the Torah. And it's a struggle, I believe. I'm not the only one in the room that has it. I'm sure some others have had the same issue. I'm just not embarrassed to say it. There are many times where we look at certain circumstances and we say, it's very difficult to be a practicing Jew, given the sensitivity of our modern community. It is a problem. And the answer to that, says Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, is not dumbing down our sense of moral sensitivity and moral understanding, but re-emphasizing and amplifying our understanding of what Yiras Shamayim is meant to be in our lives. I think that is so often lacking in when we look around the community and when we see certain people who are so outspoken about some of the issues going on today. You think about, where's the Yiras Shamayim? You know, let's consider, where is the Yiras Shamayim? And again, our job is not to judge other people or to figure out where they're holding and where they're not holding, whether they believe in God or they don't believe in God, but just to think, when we have these kinds of challenges, I think this is a way of helping to frame them, a way of seeing it in a context of how is a moral and ethical Jew of today supposed to deal with many of the ethical dilemmas that we see ourselves face with. So I think it's a very important tefillah that we start every day.